On this episode of the Autumn Windbag, Soto has a bad feeling about where the season is headed. I talked some sense into him. This week in the NFL loves the Raiders, sarcasm inserted. Peter King thinks Las Vegas is the source of the Raiders' problem. We look back at Raiders versus Giants. It's great that DeSean Jackson is a Raider. And we break down Raiders versus Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment and on every platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today.
All day.
I'm playing a little injured today, so it feels like I'm forcing the energy. It's because I've been fighting a fever, sore throat, body aches.
Bit.
So sick. Like, you know, I like to, sometimes when I want to complain about my job, I got to have to like kick myself in the ass. Like, I'm not a coal miner in West Virginia, you know? Like, I'm not
a coal miner's daughter.
That's another hard job. Or an Alaskan crab fisherman. You know, like, I'm a radio host and a TV writer. Like, it's an easy gig. But I was so sick yesterday, I literally couldn't do my radio show, which is like, Archie, you just sit there and talk into a microphone. Like, that's how bad I felt yesterday. Feeling better today, playing injured. But, hey, game face because it's Chiefs week, Sunday Night Football. I love it when the Raiders are in primetime, mostly just because I get to kind of like watch all the other games, like care about fantasy a little bit, let red zone work instead of just zeroing in on the Raiders. Sunday Night Football, best possible way to do it. Freaking jacked. I'm excited, despite the fact that I'm, you know, a walking petri dish of disease. Mm-hmm. But you're Debbie Downer today, Soto. You're little miss rain clouds and mopiness. What's up?
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm moping about something. I would notice certain things and certain patterns and the way things go. And you take a look at a couple of our early wins. I'm deathly afraid that we're going to be like an 8-9 win team.
Okay.
And the easy part of our schedule is pretty much gone. We have a lot tougher teams coming up. I think the easiest, quote unquote, easiest game that we have coming up is Washington.
Mm-hmm.
No division games are really ever easy. We got the Chiefs twice. We still got the Chargers, Broncos. That's four. We got the Cowboys, who are tough. It's
Bengals, Browns.
That's we got some teams to play, and
but we had no easy part of our schedule, really. Like, we literally opened up with Ravens, Steelers, okay, who are on fire,
and then we got an injury depleted. Steelers, okay, and then we lost to the Chargers, who we should have beat. We played terrible, and we still lost by. We're still very close.
Mm-hmm.
We lost to the fucking Bears. That was an easy win. We took care of the Broncos. We took care of the Eagles. Lost to the Giants, which should have been an easy win. We should have beat them by double digits. And when you don't win the games that you should win handily, even if they're close wins, you're looking at normally, if you don't do that, you're looking at an 8-9 win season. Like,
but
this
but
year,
what about beating the teams you're not supposed to beat either? Like, it was unanimous. Every expert in every network said we were going to lose to the Ravens. Every expert in every network said we're going to lose to the Steelers. And we beat them both.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I'm saying is like, okay, like, yeah, like bad losses. Dude, even like,
even we're
Matthew,
not good enough
even Matthew
team.
Stafford on primetime threw the game away.
Yeah.
Like, and he's probably the lead MVP candidate.
Sure.
Right. And he threw that game away. Right.
Okay.
The best of the best throw games away.
I understand that, but we're not the best of the best. We're not that good. We need to take care of the teams we need to take care of. And then we can maybe go 500 against the really tough teams.
So we've shown that we could beat anybody and that we can lose to almost anybody. We didn't lose to the Jags. We didn't lose to the Jets, but like We've proven that we can lose to, you know, 2-6 Giants. What makes you think that we're going to keep playing like we did against the Giants and not play like we did against the Ravens and Steelers?
Because these things tend to normal out. Like, they level out as the season goes on.
I think you just have battered wife syndrome.
No,
in the last few seasons of being a Raider fan.
I just think what is going on is you take a look at those first two victories. We played really well, but we also got very lucky. Now, the good teams win those games, but they also take care of those games that they're supposed to win. Mm-hmm. And losing to the freaking Bears and losing to the freaking Giants, that's the difference between 11 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins, 8 wins. That's the difference between making the playoffs and being just outside the playoffs, is those types of games. Mm-hmm. And although we've played well, we're not one of these teams that, like, outclasses every single team out there. Like, you could tell, okay, they're just that good. They're going to lose if something stupid happens. Like, that's not who we are. Are you saying
this is going to be a repeat from the last two seasons where we start strong and just fall apart late? Or are you saying we just were never as good as our record said we were?
I don't want to say that we were never as good as our record said we were, but I think that we're not in the position to let easy wins go on our schedule. Because I don't know that
Are the Rams? It's a weird season, right? Like, yeah, if you look at the top.
What's your point, though? They're not letting easy wins go.
This is my point.
Beating teams.
Everyone in the AFC is just a mess, right? Like, you look at the top teams in football, probably the top 4 or 5 NFC teams.
Probably, yeah.
Right? I would say, you know, Cardinals, Rams, Cowboys, Tampa Bay, like, probably all AFC.
If not for that last Bills game, yeah.
But the flip side to that is almost a third of the top of the AFC is all kind of the same, right? Everyone's kind of like 5-4, you know, in that same kind of area, right? And so I get it, right? Like, you can nitpick the things that we do wrong. Clearly, it's there. But I don't think this is going to be a repeat of the last two seasons, the late season breakdowns, for two reasons. One, we have a defense. Mm-hmm. For the first time in 20 years. Like, not a great defense, just a defense. Mm-hmm. A defense with a pulse. A defense that doesn't look like it needs those electronic paddles and CPR every single quarter.
Yeah, we got players out there.
Elite pass rush, elite players at every level, average to slightly better than average defense, which is huge. And two, I think this is the bigger part about the late fall off, is we have depth for the first time. Mm-hmm. Like, we had talent the last few seasons. There's been talented players, but because the drafts were so terrible, because there were so many free agent whiffs, we can put some starters out there, and that was it. As soon as that starter goes down, we're screwed, right?
We're done.
This team is only going to get stronger as the season goes by. Francisco Carnito's going to come back. Yeah. There's going to be some guys on the IR that are going
to
come back.
There are two things that make me kind of very hesitant to say that. Number one, we played probably one of our worst games coming off the bye, which is a typical thing for us. So I'm looking back at
four seasons in a row.
Yeah, I'm looking back to behaviors, past behaviors, and our just diarrhea in the red zone. Mm-hmm. Those two things are things that we should have left in the past, and they still creep up. And when you see things that have creeped up in previous years pop up again in a year that it's not supposed to happen this year. This year's going to be different. Well, I'm still seeing these things happen.
That's
why I say that, because I'm seeing these things come up. Now, the fact that we have a defense and all that stuff, yeah, that's fine. But bad teams find a way. But bad teams find a way to lose games.
See, you use a lot of innuendo and slogans. Like,
what are you talking about?
This is what bad teams find ways to lose games. Great teams find ways to lose games. Right?
No. Bad teams find ways to win
games. We see it all the time.
No. Bad teams find ways to lose games. I say that is when you miss a 25-yard field goal. when you're 1 for 6 touchdowns in the red zone, like shit like that, and you only lose by a few points. Like you have, you're one score away from winning the game.
Mm-hmm.
That type of shit, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that specifically because it could have been different if you would have done play one play here, one play there. Bad teams don't make those plays consistently, at least when they matter, and they mattered the last week. And I'm like, here we go again. And if for everyone out there was like, dude, it's a new season, you're such a fucking this, you're such a fucking that, or whatever. We said that last year, and it happened again. I'm looking at repeated behaviors and those behaviors leading to a late season crumble.
I'm so over the analysis of bad teams don't do X, good teams don't do Y. Like, there's great teams in the history of the NFL that have done every bad thing you can do bad and still won. There are terrible teams in the history of the NFL that have done everything you could do good and still sucked. Like, bad teams. Of course we want to be better in the red zone, obviously. Of course it was Derek Carr through, 92% accuracy every single game. Like, that's the goal, and that's what we want. And how do we get there? But this whole, like, there's ways to over... It's not like the Raiders have just been, like, have taken a cattle prod jammed into their ass that just branded them as bad in the red zone. Like, the more I rewatch the tape from the Giants game, like, the Reds, like, it was bad there because... You know, Waller had one drop, Carr missed twice, and Jacobs, like, he cut, like, left, and if he would have cut right, it would have been a touchdown. Like, it's not like a mysterious, like, wizard waved them bad in the red zone. There was very specific moments of execution, all different, that just didn't happen. And those are all correctable things. So these, like, grand, like, generalities, like, so bad in the red zone, like, yeah, that... The numbers say we're bad in the red zone, but they're all correctable issues.
So what if they're not corrected then, and they're still made? What then?
Then we're gonna suck.
That's my point.
Right? Like, we're taking, like, okay, the Giants game was an abnormality.
No, Derek it's Carr, not.
Yes, it was. Derek Carr's insanely accurate.
He was what, 30 for 46?
Something like that. I can look it up.
30 for 46.
Yeah.
My computer, like mine, that's like over almost 70%.
You only know that because that window was open on Pornhub off to the side. So it was just like burnt into your brain.
So he wasn't inaccurate. He was still almost 70%.
You just spent all the post show talking about how shitty and inaccurate he was. You literally just spent the post. We both did.
I didn't say he was inaccurate. I said that he didn't push the ball. He's 6.5, 300 yards basically on 45 or 46 throws is not good. It's 6.5 yards average. He was inaccurate in the red zone. He was inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
He missed 2 touchdown passes. I mean,
you just come on here, Soto, and said, I have a hunch. I got a bad feeling about this.
Well, I'm telling you why I have.
My grandma had a seance and called me and told me about it. Then I'd be like, okay, like I get that.
I'm saying I have a bad feeling, and I'm telling you why I got that bad feeling. And the bad feeling is bad shit that I like shit that crappy teams do. They're doing it, and they've done the same things the last couple of years around this time.
And the things great teams do, they also do, right?
Like, but they're more talented, so they can get away with that.
I think we're more talented now with more depth.
I think we're more talented too. That's why I think we're going to get 9 wins instead of 8 or 6 or 4.
Because it's one more game of the season. Look, you could be right, right? Like obviously, like, you know, neither one of us predicting the future. If they go just like, you know, fall off a cliff terribly.
They don't have to fall off a cliff. That those first two games were very hard fought won games, but they could have easily lost those two games with the same very similar stats, one less pass here or there, you know, and the game's the other way around, and we're two less wins.
My overall point is the things that made us fall apart late the last two seasons have been more or less corrected, and so like that history, the foundation for that to repeat isn't there. They could fall apart for other reasons. We can lose games for a million other reasons, right? I'm just saying The pieces for history to repeat themselves aren't there this time. That's why I'm optimistic that the same errors from, you know, 2019 and 2020 won't be here. We can still completely fall apart, but it won't be because of depth and it won't be because of defense. There's going to be something else. Maybe the curse you just put on the Raiders right now. Or maybe you're doing a reverse curse and you didn't tell me about it to make sure the curse has a really strong like element to it. In which case I say, touche, Soto. Touche. One thing the Raiders always have going for us is that the NFL loves the Raiders. If there's one thing that history has told us, is that the Raiders and the NFL are like peas and carrots. Roger Goodell is the biggest cheerleader of the Raiders.
The biggest advocate for the Raiders.
He sleeps in silver and black pajamas, I'm sure. Ooh,
very
right?
Sexy.
Paints his face before he goes on dates with his wife. We know how much the NFL loves the Raiders. So you can imagine how shocked I was. I almost fell out of my chair unconscious. I was so shocked when I found out that the Packers were fined $300,000 for COVID violations and Aaron Rodgers was fined $14,650. I'm like, wait a minute, $300,000? The Raiders got dinged for $1.2 million.
Pretty rough.
And threatened a lost draft pick.
Actually, it was taken away, but then they gave it back.
Yeah, they took a draft pick away and gave back, flirted with that, right? Give them an inch, take a mile. $900,000 more because we had players go to a charity event than the Packers because they had all these violations over the course of 2.5 months.
Dude, here's the deal. Here's what really pisses me off. So the Raiders held a charity event, right?
Yeah, and Darren Waller's charity event.
Waller's charity event, yeah.
Doing a good deed.
Doing a good thing. No, weren't wearing masks, this and that, Okay. Aaron Rodgers lies about being vaccinated, doesn't follow any protocols that are set, goes to a Halloween party unvaccinated without a mask with a teammate, and gets a little slap on the wrist.
That's what he spends on Sudoku books a month. 14,000. It's ridiculous. Now, we had 10 players get $15,000 fines. 10. Derek Carr, Jason Witten, Derek Carrier, Zay Jones, Devin Lawson, Foster Moreau, Nathan Peterman, Hunter Renfrow, Eric Magnussen. 10 players got fined more for going to a charity event one time than Aaron Rodgers got for lying about his status for 2.5 months. Not only that, it was more, and it was more by $350. Like, they dropped it just enough to give a verbal F you, Raiders. We're going to charge Aaron Rodgers just enough. It's like in The Price is Right. When someone bets like $900 on a sofa and you're like 901 just to like beat him and be a dick. That's what Roger Goodell did to the Raiders. Oh, yeah. We're going to charge Aaron Rodgers $350 less dollars for lying for 2.5 months than 10 Raiders who were trying to do a good deed.
Yeah, he got that Rodgers rate.
Jesus Christ. Notice they haven't been doing as many of his commercials.
They took them all off the air. They took them all off. Any commercial that he's on for State Farm is taken off.
Yeah. If anything, I would have him on more often.
And he won't shut the fuck up about it.
Yeah.
It's like you're making yourself look worse. You're bringing more attention, which is going to make the NFL look worse when nothing happens to him.
Mm-hmm.
And unvaccinated, who knows how long he had COVID, not wearing any masks during his press conferences, which you're supposed to do if you're not vaccinated, not wearing masks when you're on the sidelines. It's like, come on, man. It's pretty bad. Pretty bad.
And this is whenever I say, like, you know, yeah, the NFL, the Roger Goodell, they hate the Raiders. They always have. Everyone's like, oh, victim mentality. Oh, every team thinks that. Oh, every time something bad happens to a team, everyone says that. It's like, I'm going to just start a list of every time Roger Goodell in the NFL blatantly screw over the Raiders compared to somebody else.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna start making a list because it's like I can never think of like the 37 things they've done off the top of my head to prove to like this Chargers or Chiefs fan that I'm arguing with and trying not to take out my brass knuckles and knock their teeth out. And I just can't. Like, I have to just write a list because it's all there. My entire life, I've seen it over and over and over and over and over again. Here's example 932 of just blatant double birds to the Raiders. Hey, maybe it's not that the Raiders are treated bad by the NFL. Maybe it's just the other 31 teams get preferential treatment.
They get treated really well.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. Maybe it's that one.
It's like when all your buddies go to the club and they all have like the bright orange fucking wristband and you got the like cheap ass blue one. You're like, what the fuck? What do you mean you get premium drinks for free? What the hell?
Well, here's one more thing I want to get to before we'll get to the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Giants game. Excuse me. Playing in
Giant over here.
No, seriously. Like, I'm literally, people laugh. I'm literally drinking this whiskey medicinally.
Yeah, that's why I tell people.
Just try to clean that throat up a little bit. So we know that the NFL didn't want to go to Las Vegas forever because of gambling, bad optics, blah, blah, blah. Blow me, right? Now, with the recent run that the Raiders have had with not one, but two first-round players from the same draft off the team for two different and varying degrees of bad, but semi-similar reasons, even though they're very different in degrees of bad. Henry Ruggs obviously killing somebody while being drunk behind the wheel. Damon Arnette getting released because of, you know, multiple driving issues, kind of building the foundation for it, and then threatening somebody with a gun in a video post.
Dude, I just can't, like, I feel so terrible. As terrible as I feel for the whole Henry Ruggs incident, I feel that much more like just disdain for Damon Arnette and for his incident. It's like, you fucking dumb shit.
So here's Peter King and his take on it. He thought to himself, do you think it might be Vegas? I can tell you I'm glad I'm not working with the team in Vegas. That's an official from the NFL, according to Peter King, that he talked to. Peter King said, at first glance, it seems like a conclusion jump. But what if the city that rarely sleeps is really a detriment for team building and a detriment for young players flush with cash for the first time in their lives? Are young players in Cincinnati or Minneapolis or Green Bay or Seattle driving 156 miles per hour in the streets at 3:30 on a Tuesday morning during the season or being tempted in other ways in a city that is awake at all hours? No way of knowing, of course, and it's not nearly as important as the death of a 23-year-old woman and her golden retriever in the car late at night. But if I'm the Raiders and I'm serious about being a long-term contender in Sin City, I'm turning over every rock to make sure the franchise stops screeching from one franchise-jarring piece of news to another. Raiders GM Mike Mayock, assuming he's now at least the medium-tier caretaker of the team, has to make that a priority, one, as he goes forward. This franchise is crying out for stability, and Mayock's job right now is to draft and construct and manage a team that makes it happen. More about the Raiders in a minute, but blah, 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 blah. So this has been a part of the entire conversation about any pro team going to Las Vegas. Number one has been the gambling and the optics, but two has been, can a party town, like literally where you go for debauchery, be able to handle, you know, 23-year-old famous millionaires, young, dumb, and full of cum, running through the streets, right? To which I say, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
This is absolute bullshit. Henry Ruggs was leaving golfing in a friend's house. He was doing Top Golf and went to a friend's house. Damon Arnette made that video in his home. Like, you can see he was walking through the hallways of like an apartment and made a video of it. This has nothing to do with Las Vegas. Like, if there were like five members of the team that all got arrested at Dre's at 5 a.m, then I'd have this conversation. But the idea that like, oh, Sin City, it's just too sinful for Henry Ruggs and Damon Arnette. Look at the mistakes they made. You could pull that shit in Alaska.
It's that rap music.
You could pull that shit anywhere. There's nothing unique about unique to Vegas about their situations.
Dude, clubs in Miami close at 5 a.m.
And his example, oh, you're not seeing guys from Seattle or Minneapolis, wherever. You've seen players screw up in every city in America.
Dude, didn't a guy from Seattle, didn't a fucking, your boy, Richard Sherman fucking kick his fucking, his in-laws door down at like 3 a.m. or something like that?
No one was blaming the freaking Space Needle back then. Oh man, there's way too many Starbucks in Seattle. It's causing,
he can't go to sleep. He can't do it.
He's just out going crazy. He's just mainlining caffeine and it's just a problem.
Dude, that idiot from the fucking Chiefs who killed his baby mama and then killed himself in his car, like that was on a fucking Tuesday in fucking Missouri.
Here's the other part too. Okay, well one, like, okay, so we both live in Southern California and we know that side of Vegas.
Oh yeah.
For, you know, from 19 with a fake ID to about 31, that was exactly what Vegas was to me and you. Like, yeah, like we're going to Vegas, we're gonna get hammered, we're gonna go to strip clubs, we're gonna gamble our asses off, we're gonna try to get in trouble. At our mutual friend Rick Lee's bachelor party, I was there three nights. I was escorted by security to my room every night because that's what I was in Vegas there to do. Right? I was there to cause a ruckus.
I told the story before. RJ and I were trying to get kicked out of the Fremont Casino downtown. Like, we were attempting to do things that they were saying, you can't take pictures at the table. You can only have one drink at a time. Don't pour drinks on each other. And we just kept doing it. And
so we just started taking pictures of us having multiple drinks at a time, pouring them on each other, right? Because we were out of towners there to be assholes. Okay?
Yeah. And we were.
And we were. Mission accomplished. Now, I'm in Vegas because I work for the UFC. I'm in Vegas 25 times a year working, right? It's completely different now. I've been to the Strip maybe twice in the last 50 trips I've been to Vegas. And that was only because a friend of mine from out of town was also in Vegas and I met them. And I still, like, I'm not a nun when I'm in Vegas. I'll still go to, like, get drinks after. I'll still go to a strip club every now and then. But if you're not, you're not tearing the Strip a new asshole. Why? Because it's a regular thing for me. I don't even live there. And it's already been neutered to me not being crazy RG in Vegas anymore because it's there so often. The players live there. When you live there, it's not the Strip. Like, Vegas is so much bigger than just the Strip.
Lose the shine.
Yeah, well, it doesn't lose the shine, but it's like, you only have so much energy. Like, the Strip, like, it takes me 3 days to recover from a Vegas trip.
Plus, we have the Hawaiian Gardens Casino if you want to play some poker.
I got dive bars around the corner from me and terrible strip clubs by airports that keep me safe. Right? So when you're going to Vegas and partying, the allure of Vegas for the other 49 states in the country, I get it. Because when you're flying in, everyone who's reading this is thinking, yeah, I remember when I went to Vegas and I did X, Y, and Z. I'd be an alcoholic, coke addict. All the hookers would have all my money if I lived there. Oh God. It's like, no, that doesn't happen for most people. Some super degenerates it'll happen to you. But the vast majority, if it didn't happen to me, it won't happen to most people. Let's put it that way. Like, I was the degenerate Vegas asshole. And what happened? Yeah. I started working there 25, 30 weekends a year. And now I'm back to just there to work, acting like a normal
regular asshole, George.
Yeah, I'm just regular asshole. I'm Long Beach asshole in Las Vegas. I'm not Las Vegas asshole in Las Vegas. I'm RJ Long Beach asshole in Las Vegas.
Nice to meet you.
It's nice to be met. I feel like a new man. And here's the other part. If Vegas is such a web of sin that these players can't escape from, then explain to me how Darren Waller, a very public addict who struggled with it for his entire life, is completely clean there, having no problem.
Max Crosby got sober after he went to Vegas.
In Vegas. It took Las Vegas, Nevada to dry him out.
Yeah.
Richie Incognito, he's been fine in Vegas. He's had, alcohol problems and abuse problems, a bunch of problems in his past. He got on the right. He righted his ship before he got to Vegas, but he hasn't fallen off. He was at a UFC at the Apex just not that long ago, drinking a soda, watching fights, being a normal guy.
He's a big fucking guy. He's just like a thick dude.
Yeah, he's an NFL guard.
God, he's built like a brick. He's like a cinder block, like a human-sized cinder block. The 6'3" cinder
block. His neck size?
It's weird. It's crazy.
It's got to be like the circumference of a basketball. It's nuts.
He looks like a fucking rhino. Like, he's just head, neck, then the shoulders kind of like dip right through.
So I get it, right? You have a lot of columns you got to write. And all right.
It's a low-hanging fruit, man.
I understand. Hey, two players in the span of a week got themselves in trouble in Las Vegas.
For vastly different things, though.
Vastly different things. And so you try to connect the dots. And those are two dots that were very close together and easily connected. But the connection ain't there. I'm sorry. All right. You know what that means. The good, the bad, and the ugly from MetLife Stadium, New Jersey. Raiders lost 23-16 to the New York Football Giants. I was at the game. Haven't been to an away game in a while. I think, like, with COVID and just not traveling for a while. Was it kind of fun being at a new stadium? One thing I noticed, though, almost every like 10 minutes, they probably did this 7 or 8 times. They had this like salute to the military that the NFL has been doing forever. And they would bring a wounded officer or this brigade of the squad that did XYZ, put them on the field in between plays. Hey, here's so-and-so. It's a plot, blah, blah, blah. The first one they did, they brought this sergeant on who had PTSD from Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever it was. And he's been trying to get an emotional support dog, for a while. And I guess there's a waiting list or something. And so they surprised him with this emotional support dog. He's like the happiest dog in the world, like jumping around, the guy's all pumped. And so, but the problem was they led with that. And so every single time they brought another military member out to recognize them for something, my wife's like, are they going to bring a dog out? Does this guy get a dog? Wait, do all these squad members get a dog? Oh, no dog.
You can't lead with your number one hit, man.
You can't do it.
That's going to be the closer.
Right? You don't start off a pay-per-view with Conor McGregor, right? You end with Conor McGregor. You got to build the card up and end with a zinger. Instead, they started out with they hit you with the dog that needs a home with the guy that needs a dog right out of the gate. They got to work on that. They got to work on their card building.
They got to work on their set list.
Yeah. Terrible.
What kind of dog was it?
It looked like a shepherd lab mix.
All right. Smart. Yeah.
White, medium energy. To medium big, really energetic. That's what made me sure it was a lab. It was just, oh my God. Oh my God. This is awesome. That's gonna be the coolest thing ever if you're a dog. 50,000 people looking at you. Open field, you're running to another person who's
so much fucking grass.
Oh yeah. He was jacked. All right. Anyway, that was I don't know if that was the good or the ugly, but it was good seeing the dog. Ugly how they built the card.
Got it. Let's get to the game. So we got the good.
Sorry.
You good? You need a refill there, nurse?
I may need one. You have to carry this show for a little bit.
All right. So the good, Yannick Ngakoue had 2 sacks, 1 forced fumble, a tackle for loss, and a pass defense. So excellent job by Yannick Ngakoue.
He's become a feast or famine guy, right?
Yeah.
Big games are kind of quiet games.
He's a game impacting. Like that forced fumble, that pass defense was on a pivotal third down play where the Giants picked up 2 first downs consecutively. So they were moving the ball down the field and was kind of like looped right past the 50-yard line. And he got free, jumped up, swatted the ball down. And that was a big third. That was a big third down stop.
I'm not going to lie. That strip sack, that forced fumble, in my mind, I was thinking, okay, going to be just like the Eagles game. It's all downhill from here. We got that turnover. We're going to go nuts. We're going to get a bunch of points. We're going to have a blowout. I'm not going to lie. That was kind of in my mind at that point. It's like, all right, here it goes.
Yeah, they scored. Then we scored. Like, okay, we're tied 7-7. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Now we got the ball back. All right.
Here we go.
Touchdown. Nope.
That's what I was thinking.
Nope. All right. Denzel Perryman back in the double digits with 10 total tackles, 8 solo, and a pass defense.
He slowed down a little bit. Like, you can't get double-digit sacks or tackles every game. But he's gonna average like 9 tackles, 8.5, 9 tackles a game.
He's averaging like, because he wouldn't get just 10. He would get like 13, 12. Yeah. Like, he would always be over by a couple. Mm-hmm. So he might average right around 10. That's like 170 tackles. That'd be fucking amazing.
He's lying.
Nate Hobbs, man. He got a sack, a tackle for loss. And here's the reason why he's on here. 3 quarterback hits.
Remember I was saying in the pregame, the preview show, like, we should, I know we don't normally blitz a lot, but let's send some dudes. Like,
Hobbs knows how to blitz too. Like, he always gets through.
Yeah. Like, Daniel Jones is going to like kill us deep, you know, like, he's not going to read the blitz and make us pay like a Derek Carr or a Tom Brady or something. It's like, let's blitz at him. And they did.
Another part of the good. Raiders rushing attack. They didn't rush the ball that much, but they were very effective. 20 rushes total for 117 yards. That's 5.9 average for the team. Jacobs, 13 for 76. That's 5.8 yards average. Kenyon Drake, 4 rushes for 30 yards, 7.5 yard average. So that's a great job there. That's part of the good.
And Drake got another 70 yards and receptions.
With 6 receptions for like 70-something yards.
Let me ask you this. Is there any scenario at all where Kenyon Drake replaces Josh Jacobs as RB1? Other than injury, obviously.
No, I don't think so, because he doesn't do what Jacobs does.
But he's got big play. He's got big play potential every time he has the ball. And he's 1,000 times better receiver.
Yeah, but he's more of a change of pace guy. It's a different type of back, man. It's a different type of back to be able to grind those freaking yards out when it's obvious, you know, rush downs, and still be able to gain yardage. It's a little bit different than being in like maybe a tweener, like a 2nd and 4, 2nd and 5, and run the ball there. It's harder to run the ball when it's like.
Then how about Jacobs is the change of pace guy?
He's not as explosive as Drake. You need to have that explosion to be that change of pace guy.
Well, what I'm saying is, how about we're the explosive offense early, and then we do, you know, then we grind it kind of randomly.
I mean, it's possible. I was saying that we should when we can't run the ball. And I know this is going to sound like I'm
paying Drake more. Like,
yeah, I know, right? I know it's going to sound like I'm going to talk it out on both sides of my face, but. Hear me out here. When we aren't running the ball well, I am a proponent of using our short passing game as our running game. Mm-hmm. But when we are running the ball well, we should run the ball more. We were to get in 6 yards a rip. Maybe we should run the ball more.
Yeah.
We had 6 yards of carry, basically, and then 6.5 yards of pass attempt. Yeah. I take the carries.
Ran the ball 20 times, threw the ball 46 times.
Yeah.
On a day when we were rushing great and passing poorly.
It just doesn't make sense, man.
Yeah. I'll add one. How about just our defense in general? Held an NFL quarterback in 2021 who had a win to 110 yards passing. 110 yards passing. That is peewee football numbers. And this is the National Football League in 2021. That's really impressive.
110 yards, yeah. I think it was net like 98. I think he lost 12 yards in sacks. Fucking crazy.
That's awesome.
That's crazy. Awesome. All right, let's go on to the bad.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Darius Filon, god damn, man, he was playing really well. He actually recovered a fumble in that game. Hits the IR with an ankle injury. So he's going to be out for at least 3 games. So I think that's a big blow for us, because he was playing really well at defensive tackle. Daniel Carlson misses a 25-yard field goal attempt. God damn, dude. That was ugly. And I was singing his
praises so hard last season and early this season. He's fallen off, dude. He's missed a couple chip shots. How many extra points has he missed? 2? At least 2, right?
So if you kick a 25-yard field goal attempt, okay, take away 7 yards for the snap, so you're at 18, right? And then you take away 10 yards for the end zone, you're on the 8-yard line. Mm-hmm. That's how close you are. And that shit was never good. It wasn't like he kicked it and then like it kind of curved off. He kicked it and like I was to give you that end zone view of the field of the goalpost, and that shit was always fucking like on the side.
And if anything, with this Raiders offense and how we've been playing it, how we're trending in the red zone, if you're like, all right, do you want a kicker that never misses chip shots but is kind of shitty deep, or one that's pretty good deep but isn't always counted on in chip shots? I take the chip shot guy. They're like, all right, you'll miss most of your 50 yarders. Okay, never miss from 30. That's just how we've been in the red zone, right? And now he's missing the chippers.
No good. No bueno. So that's it for the bad. Let's get to the ugly. Derek Carr, 3 turnovers. He had a fumble, 2 interceptions. One of them was a pick six. It was the difference in the game. The pick six.
I will give credit to McKinney on those picks. Like, he did not fall for that pump fake on that second one. Like, Carr, like, was staring down. Was it Edwards?
I think it was Edwards.
He like pump fake McKinney, didn't budge, just boom, read it perfect, got it.
The thing that I don't understand is you pump fake to like for the safety.
Yeah, exactly.
And he doesn't move and he still threw the pass. That was a very bad interception. And the first interception, the pick six, was even worse. Mm-hmm. He threw the ball super late. Renfrow had already turned around and was facing him. That's how late the ball came out. And the ball was behind him. So not only was the ball late, he threw the ball. Dude, the ball went right.
Ball was behind him. Both interceptions, the ball was underthrown.
Dude, the fucking both of them. The ball went to McKinney. Like, he was like the receiver on that play. Yeah. So that was ugly. Also, another thing that's ugly, we talked about it already. The Raiders, 1 touchdown and 6 red zone trips. Not good. Can't continue. Can't win if you're going 1 for 6. Basically, 16% red zone efficiency. So there it is, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
With an extra big wah, wah, wah at the end.
I almost said the good, the bad, and the RJ. Like, but like, I wasn't thinking of saying it. I almost just said it just to say it. And I'm like, oh shit, that would have been funny if I did.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe well, next week.
Some fun news. DeSean Jackson,
hey.
Now a Raider. Long Beach in the house.
Long Beach Pauly, baby. Long Beach Pauly.
Long Beach Pauly Jackrabbit, now a Raider. It's been a while since we've had a Long Beach Pauly guy. When's the last Pauly guy that Raiders have had?
Fuck.
It's been a while. He practiced today for the very first time. He was signed on Monday, obviously, with Henry Ruggs gone. We needed a speedster. This is exactly the guy that everyone was talking about, right? This was a no-brainer in the history of no-brainers. We needed a speedster. He was available. We didn't have a ton of money. He wanted to play for a contender. He's practicing today. It was a match made in heaven. I'm not saying he's going to be a world beater for us, but it's exactly where he should go for all parties involved, I think.
I think it's a great spot because I think that he brings a lot of tools that Henry Ruggs did, so he's able to slide into that role. But I do feel that he is a better route runner in this sense. He is much more comfortable with NFL coverages. Ruggs really struggled with press man coverage when they had a safety over the top. Basically, he was useless at that point. He was just going to, let me just like get off the line and run straight down the field and like take the attention away. I'm not going to get the ball. I'm not going to beat my guy. DeSean Jackson is much more adept.
DeSean Watson would really fit in with the narrative of the Raiders right now, wouldn't he? Imagine if he was the quarterback.
With all those rub and tug spots, dude. That's, he wouldn't have,
If that was the case, then that's when I would be like, oh, Vegas might be the problem. How about that? He's in Houston. He's in Texas.
Bro, one of those conservative states. Vegas, bro. Houston is wild.
That's my point. Every city in America can be wild. Every one of them.
Houston is like New Orleans light.
I had the time of my life in Rochester, New York.
Wow.
One time when I was there working for the UFC.
I had a good ass time.
Dive bar, strip club, steak dinner. We raged in Rochester, New York. Sleepy little town. You can rage wherever you want to.
I had a good time in Rochester, Minnesota.
Touche. That's a one-up if I've ever heard one. I don't even know where. I didn't even know that existed.
It's like close to the border of Canada. It's cold as shit. It's in February. So they knew that we were off in California when we were going to the trip. They sent us a video with like how to like handle sub-zero weather. Like anything that wiggles on your face, you have to cover it. So like your nose, your cheeks, your lips. Like you have to have it covered when you walk outside. Your tits.
Yeah, that too.
You have to have it covered when you walk outside. Dude, that shit is fucking awful. You can't take a deep breath. It feels like you're swallowing fucking razor blades.
So, so I like how, because he was, you know, coming from the Rams, Sean McVay, similar system to the Raiders, right? Sean McVay kind of, you know, came from Gruden, not that big of a learning. He's a veteran, so hopefully, like, even if it wasn't a similar system, the learning curve should be quick, but it is a similar system. He's coming in really humble. Like, everything I've heard from him, we'll play some clips from this from the presser that he had today. Sounds like... He got humbled a little bit, right? Like he's a speedster, this badass, this, you know, second round pick. He's going to take over the world. He's been on multiple teams the last few seasons. He's like, okay, I know what my role is going to be, right? I hope it stays that way. Because remember, he left the Rams, not because the Rams wanted him gone, was because he wanted a bigger role for another team, right? And it's like the Rams are like Super Bowl favorites. Like, if you want to be like, it's not like he's, it's not like OBJ leaving the Browns, you know, where Baker can't get him the ball, or, you know, some all-star player on the Jaguars or something with only a few seasons left. Like he was on, I'd say Rams are probably Super Bowl favorites, right?
Yeah,
like,
they're probably one of the one or two. They're in the top three, I would say, in the NFC right now.
And they're making moves to be even better, right? Signing Von Miller and all this stuff.
Von Miller.
That's like, that's a team I'd want to be on my twilight season. So here's hoping that he stays as humble and doesn't start getting drama. Because, you know, he's had some diva moments, right? Multiple times he's lost touchdowns because he'd like
celebrate right on the one.
Celebrate before, right? He's done it multiple times in college and pro.
Yeah.
Like that's a red flag. That's one of the biggest red flags. It's more important for me to celebrate than to make sure I actually cross the goal line. Actually be in the end zone. So here's hoping that like it stays that way. And it's a good, you know, it's a good locker room for like tweener guys. Like, I didn't want OBJ on the Raiders because he's just like over the top diva. But if you're kind of a tweener diva, like it can turn on and it can turn off. It's just kind of like, it's maybe not how you are exactly, but like he played for Long Beach Poly. Like I get how he is. I feel like that's a locker room that can make you better as opposed to you poisoning that locker room.
And the thing is, it's like, it's very easy to get targets with the Raiders. You walk up to Derek Carr and be like, hey, man, what's your favorite Bible verse? And like start talking to him and like kind of get on his good side and you'll get targets. You know, like that's, I think that was, I mean, I don't think, I know that was the issue with
the Rams. You guys have a play called John 3:16, right? That's my favorite. That's my favorite play. Oh, it's a Bible verse too? Oh, wow. What a coincidence. Oh, wow. One love.
What about Austin 3:16? So, with LA, he didn't get targets. So he wants to win, but he wants to be a part of the winning. I think in the five games or six games that he played with them, he got like 10 targets. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's nothing. So yeah. He was basically an after. That's like Zay Jones when we had a full crop of receivers. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I understand where he's coming from. I think that as long as we keep him involved in the game plan, which there are a lot of things that we can do to get him involved early, namely, like, the very first play against the Eagles, when we ran that, like, 4-yard stop route to Ruggs, because the guy's going to give him, like, a 7-yard cushion. So, okay, I got the ball in the, you know, 4 yards deep, and the guy's 7 yards away. I just need to, like, make him miss or make him a little hesitant to come at me because of my speed, and I'm going to grab a first down, no problem. But we can do that. We can do stop routes a little further down the field, those in-cutting routes, stuff like that. We could do that.
It could be a deep decoy every down.
You know what I mean? But I do want to get him involved more. Like, because he will run those shallow crosses. He will do that. He's done that in the past. Maybe he's a little older now. He's a little more hesitant to go across with those linebackers there, but he's not going to be afraid of man coverage. He's not going to be afraid of
he can do
coverage.
Anything that doesn't require physicality, which limits a lot, but that leaves a lot of things open, right? Like,
well, I mean, to his credit though, I mean, Ruggs wasn't the guy that was looking for contact either. He'd jump up, grab a ball, he'd come, he'd just fall right down to the ground unless he was, you know, already behind guys and running away from them. But you know, he's got a little Hunter Renfro in him where he just, all right, catch the ball and get my yards and dive down on the ground. I'm not trying to get a hit out here.
So he had his first practice today, and his first press conference today. Bisaccia, excuse me, was a little, little iffy, little lukewarm on him playing on Sunday. I imagine that's probably just him just understanding he's the head coach and not giving the Chiefs, you know, any info that they don't need. But I got to imagine they'll have some kind of package ready for him. Anyway, here's DeSean Jackson on what he feels his role will be with the Raiders.
I mean, honestly, man, you know, whatever it is, you know, I'm asked to do. At this point, you know, where I'm at, like I say, coming in midway through it, you know, unfortunately, the situation with Ruggs. So kind of just not saying filling that role, but just being that spark, you know, what I've been able to do my whole career, you know, deep threat, vertical threat, and, you know, having a defense have to account for that. So, you know, if it's being a decoy, opening it up for other guys, like you said, Waller, you know, Hunter, whatever it is I need to do to, you know, be a spark, that's what I'm here for.
So he's saying all the right things. Happy to be
a decoy. He knows he'll get the ball. Mm-hmm. He knows he'll get the ball. And the thing is, it's like, if you have, like, certain packages for DeSean, to like certain plays and packages for him. We've seen it before where, you know, quarterback will call a play and then he'll tell the guy, oh yeah, you're running a fucking 10 yard out.
Yeah.
Like he'll just tell him what he's running. Okay. I don't need to know anything else. I know what I'm doing. So he doesn't need to know the plays really. He just like, he'll call a play and then he'll go to him. Hey, you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're doing, you know, X, Y, on this, you do this, on this, you do that.
Boom. I guess it also kind of depends, like, how complicated they're leaving the system. Because Gruden, like, it was no receiver, like, ever just had, like, you know, you're running a slant.
It's always like, running a choice route.
You're shifting. And then if it's man, then you're doing this. If it's not, you're doing that. And here are the three audibles. Like, now, well, it depends how it definitely sounds like Greg Olsen and Derek Carr have simplified the offense to, like, compared to Gruden,
and they even
how simplified, is the question.
Well, the thing is, it's like if you have those small packages for him, you can say, hey, it's like this play. Like Carr's smart enough to say, hey, we're running this play, okay? All right, on one, and then, hey, it's like this play.
Yeah.
So it's like okay, now he knows,
and you would know because you've had small packages for every girl you've ever met. So it makes like you would understand what it's like dealing in small packages.
I've only had one complaint, and today? That chick was 6'3". She was 6'3". She had hands bigger than mine. I'm like, look, this ain't gonna work out. I like them with the small hands, make my shit look huge.
What was that line from Fordell Version? She had an Adam's apple the size of your balls and hands the size of Andre the Giant.
She had Adam's apple as big as her balls.
And the size of Andre the Giants.
Hey, so like we paid, so we're owed
technically
a hand.
Technically she owes us. Dude, she had a dick, man.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Do we have him be our punt returner?
No.
No?
No, he's too valuable.
Right.
No.
More valuable than Renfro? No, he's not more valuable than Renfro.
He's too valuable.
He's not more valuable than Renfro.
I'm not saying Renfro is not valuable. What I'm saying is,
who is more valuable, DeSean Jackson or Hunter Renfro?
Hang on. He's not 24 years old. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. Number two, he plays a different role than Hunter Renfro does. His role, you saw what happened. We didn't have that vertical threat in the game. everything was just compacted and made it very difficult. So Hunter Renfrow is very valuable on certain downs, but for the overall offense, I think that vertical threat is more valuable.
You are on crack. Hunter Renfrow is 5 times more valuable than DeSean Jackson.
Okay.
Like ridiculously more. Third and Renfrow, under routes, choice routes, always open in the slot. Stop it. So here's DeSean Jackson on Derek Carr.
And, obviously having Derek Carr at quarterback, you know, I've been able to see him do some special things in his career. Obviously, going back to his rookie year and just, man, his arm strength, you know, his big play ability, his toughness, his swagger, you know, his intangibles to be a quarterback. I think, you know, he has all the great things in a quarterback that you asked for. And, you know, Nelson Agholor is a good friend of mine. You know, I played with him in Philly for a little bit. So after he left Philly, I was able to kind of see what he came here and did and had a lot of success. So, you know, just really seeing that vertical threat in this offense and, you know, having that playmaking ability for myself and, you know, obviously a quarterback that could get the ball down the field is huge because, you know, there was other options out there. But, you know, I was very confident in the situation that he's able to get the ball down the field.
That's big.
You want me to translate what DeSean Watson now I'm doing it. What DeSean God Jackson actually said about
Nelson Agholor? He just wants to stick a dick in somebody's face.
Do you want me to translate DeSean Please. Jackson? What he actually said was, I saw how my boy Nelly always drops, Nelson Agholor, how he was shit in Philly, came to the Raiders.
Balled the fuck out.
Balled out thanks to Derek Carr in this offense. And now he's a $22 million quarterback in New England. And he said, I want some of that cheddar. That's what he actually said. Yeah, he said
that was one of my five. That was one of my five. Derek Carr can make you a star.
He's made plenty of stars. And I don't know if he'll make DeSean Jackson a star. I mean, it would, you know, if he becomes a star, it's a problem because that means Waller got hurt or Renfrow got, you know what I mean? Like that means there's problems if DeSean Watson.
I don't know, man. Dude, I'm telling you right now, I see that. I see him filling that Agholor role because Agholor wasn't like an overly physical receiver either. He was a smaller guy.
Better route runner,
but when he got the ball, it was mostly on deeper passes. He was like one of the top five in the league in yards per reception. So I could see it's like, hey, what do you think about the Raiders? Aguilar's like, yo, man, Derek Carr, he's on it. Derek Carr will get it to you where you like it. Because, I mean, look what he did. Like, that's what a receiver wants. You don't have to be the biggest arm out there. That's a fucking fallacy. You don't have to be that. As long as you're on time and you know where and you protect your receiver, right? You can have a strong arm and you can just get your receivers annihilated. Right, you could be like a Fitzpatrick, freaking throwing the ball high over the middle, and guys are just reaching up for it and getting killed. Even Brady did that shit to fucking Gronk. Like he got his ribs broken. Like, dude, that's what receivers want. Receivers want the shit on time when they expect the ball and where they like the ball. I like the ball right here on this route. I like the ball right here because I don't want to get that fucking hit. Or on this ball. I'm used to like creating separation with this arm, so put it over this shoulder. And Carr could do that. Carr will do that.
One last thing on DeSean Jackson before we move on to Raiders Chiefs. How good does he have to play for us to forgive him for calling the Raiders colors the black and silver? He did it 3 times in the press conference. Instead of saying the silver and black, he said the black and silver. The dude's from L.A. Like, he was in L.A. when the Raiders were here. And he calls it...
I mean, he was really young when they were here.
Very little.
Yeah, he left in 95.
He called it the black and silver. That's... He's got some making up to do.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
Guaranteed. They aren't guaranteed, like, a PR guy or a teammate, like, after that presser today, put their arms around him. He's like, hey, bro, we like you. These Raiders fans, they want to like you. But you got to clean this shit up.
He'll be fucking up, player.
So he's already minus one in my book for calling it the black and silver. All right. Sunday night football. It is Chiefs week, baby. We split the series last season. Mm-hmm. Chiefs are 5-4, right? 5-4. Raiders 5-3. A chance, you know, the AFC West is wide open. Everyone's either 5-3 or 5-4. This is the first time we've played them this season. We beat the Broncos, lost to the Chargers. Big one. Even though I know you're feeling like, you know, negative Nancy about the Raiders for the rest of the season, this feels the most winnable Chiefs game that I can remember in several seasons.
The thing that kept people saying that the Chiefs would turn it around was because they were turning the ball over a lot. And normally a team like the Chiefs Chiefs of years past, they're able to correct those things. The problem is they're continuing to turn over the ball every single fucking week.
Yeah.
So turnovers are going to be huge.
It's part of the DNA this year.
Huge. Yes. You have to get turnovers against the Chiefs because they're still a big play offense. So let them beat themselves, but you have to take advantage of that when they do.
That's exactly what our defense is built for.
Yeah.
Right?
The NFL is basically running a Gus Bradley defense every week that the Chiefs play. That's what they're doing. They're saying, we're not going to let you run. You know, we're not going to let you throw the ball deep. We're gonna take away the little short swing passes. We're going to take away the deep passes. You have to throw the ball in between, and you have to check down. That's what you're going to do. Or you have to run the ball, which their offensive line is actually turning out to be worse than ours.
But they're still running the ball decent. They're still running the ball decent. I hate to say it, but they're going to run the ball against us. But that's just not – Andy Reid's just too trigger happy. Patrick Mahomes is just too trigger happy to be like, we're happy. You know, we're content running the ball 40 times and passing the ball 20. Like, we're content. No way. No way would they concede defeat like that. Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Not a chance in hell that they're just happy running the ball. And so like I say, like the Raiders defense has been built to beat the Chiefs offense.
Yep.
Like, that's what John Gruden thought when he hired Gus Bradley. He saw Gus Bradley's record and the Chargers defense's record against the Chiefs, how he wanted to beat the Chiefs so bad. Last year, the Chargers under Bradley held the Chiefs to 20 points in regulation in the second week of the season because Mahomes didn't play in their second matchup. In 2019, the Chargers held Mahomes to 182 and 174 yards passing in their two contests. Like it's true. Like Gus Bradley's defense is built and bred and designed to beat a pass happy, tricky, wide open offense. Just keep everybody in front of you, rush the passer, and let them make their mistakes.
Because they will.
And they have this year more than anybody, more than any other season.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a big test for us, I think, just mentally, because it's like almost like you can never beat up your older brother, even though, like, you know, he's always got some mental edge on you.
Sure.
We need to make sure that we go out there and we just play our game, man. We just play our game, do what we know how to do, and keep the foot on the gas. Don't let go, because these guys – if you make a little mistake, they're going to make you pay, and they're going to make you pay quick. Those little fucking 5-yard slants to Tyreek, I've seen that shit. Takes them 90 yards, like nothing. And you're like, this motherfucker is still running. And we play them twice in a month. Like, we play them on the 14th of November, and then we play them again on the 12th of December. We play them twice in a month. So let's get that mental edge. You know, we're going to play home first. Let's take care of business. And let's make it at least I'm looking for a 2-score win. If we beat them by like maybe 9.
Look at you. Beginning of the show, we're like, oh man, we're gonna fall apart and be a 500 team. An hour later, you're like, I want 2-score win over the Chiefs.
Whoa.
I want to crush these guys in the Super Bowl twice.
I'm saying I'm afraid that this is what's gonna happen because of what I saw. But what I'm saying is if we do that, we can go into Kansas City in a month,
swinging,
and we can have that confidence. Like, this is not because that's not an easy place to play.
And it's not like the Chiefs have fixed their problem. Like, they're on a 2-game win streak, but it's like the weirdest 2-game win streak ever. Like, they beat the Giants 2 weeks ago, and then they beat
They barely beat the Giants 2 weeks ago, number one. Right? And then they beat a they barely beat Aaron Rodgers-less Packers.
And that was a weird game, too. Like, that's God, like
was a weird game.
It's not like they figured it out and got on the winning track.
Yeah, if Love was able to complete any type of passes in the fourth quarter, they would have won that game.
Yeah. This is a great bounce back game. It should be a great bounce back game for Carr. Stays clean in the pocket.
If you can't get right against this defense, you just can't get right.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to Casey Hayward, Tyreek Hill in that matchup.
Casey Hayward's experienced enough to keep a lid on him. But damn, man, he's fucking good. He's fucking good.
But Mahomes and Hill just haven't been in sync.
Well, the thing is, too, is
he's getting lots of targets, just not a lot of receptions.
Is Andy Reid saves shit for the Raiders. Like, he hates the fucking Raiders. He saves new packages, new plays, new wrinkles just to roll them out for the Raiders. And normally, it's using Tyreek Hill in different ways.
Good. Bring your best, Andy.
Andy.
We'll do a post-game show.
And these nuts in your mouth.
It'll be a late one because it's a Sunday night game, but goddamn, I'm looking forward to it. You ready to do some What Up Winbacks?
Oh, yes, you know it.
First one, Damon LaFargo. This one doesn't even really have a question. I just really wanted to say it. Right. Not kidding. We need to take the field next Sunday like we are walking into a South Philly tenement house on the 6th of the month with a cue ball and a sock to collect late rent. Fucking A right, Damon. That's exactly how we got to do that.
A cue ball and a sock. That is fucking graphic.
The 6th of the month, cue ball and a sock to collect late rent.
Damon, I agree.
Swinging that sock with the cue ball. God, that would mess you up. How bad does it hurt just having the soap in the sock? Man, imagine a cue ball.
Oh, God, that soap in the sock is rough. I went camping when I was like, I think it was still in elementary school. I think it was like sixth grade. And it was called Indian Village, right? Back when you could still say the word Indian.
Yeah, not very PC.
Yeah. So we actually slept in teepees. It was pretty cool. But yeah, we had that fucking soap in the sock fight, dude. That was fucking super dangerous. Because, you know, at night, there's no light in the teepee. He's like, all right, fuck it, let's do it.
You know, you jerk each other off so many times before you get bored, and then you're off to something else.
You run out of cookies. Like, what the fuck?
See, the cue ball, like, the soap in the sock is built for pain. The cue ball in the sock, there's no pain. You're just
damaged,
dead or unconscious.
it's just full-on carnage is what
you're just waking up in the ER. Like, you don't feel anything. You're just done. Alligator shoes. I want to see what Mark Mayock can do in the draft without Gruden's interference. Now, isn't that the bajillion-dollar question, right? That's really the million-dollar question. These drafts have been terrible. We just did a video, you know, saying like the Raiders 2020 draft is the worst draft in Raiders history, maybe NFL history, after only a season and a half. How much of that was Gruden? How much of that was Mayock? We'll find out if we keep Mayock, which I think they should, because I've liked his leadership.
Isn't the draft in Vegas this year?
Oh, yeah. We're going.
We got to go.
Oh, we're going. Dick's already hard. That's the million-dollar question, right? Can Mayock?
We're going to find out. And like I said, the last mini show we had on Arnett, we're going to find out right away. We're going to find out on day one if they fucking pick another bullshit-ass Leatherwood, fucking Arnett, goddamn fucking Cleveland Farrell type fucking pick. If everyone's left scratching their heads, it's like, oh, boy. I apologize, John Gruden. You did not make those picks.
Well, this is what I'm wondering is, like, a couple things can happen. Either it was all Gruden and Mayock, like, hated every one of these picks. He's already said, like, Damon Arnett was Mayock's guy. He admitted that. That obviously didn't work out.
God damn, really? I didn't hear that.
Yeah. He mentioned it. He mentioned it on the presser on Monday.
That's awful. Oh,
but other, God. But you know, how many of those bad picks were Mayock, right? Who knows? So if they were Gruden, then does Mayock look at all the heat that they've got for these terrible picks and just goes like straight up and down the line, exactly what like the analysts say? Does he just hold serve with every single pick?
That's the thing is they don't look at what the analysts say. They have their own board.
But that's my point. does he switch that up because of all the heat that his team and his, you know, his management has gotten?
Bro, if word gets out that Mayock is watching like the pre-draft special shows as a GM,
they all do.
I don't know about that, man. They say they don't.
They all know. They all either Mayock's smoking hot daughter's telling him about it, or it's like on, yeah. Or it's
you ain't fucking lying.
Or just like NFL Network is on, like in the locker room, right?
Can we get a shot of her, please?
We certainly can. What's her name? I just know her as Mike Mayock's daughter.
Oh, you need to know.
And she defends him. Like she goes, she doesn't screw around. I'm trying to look for a really good one. Let's see. She ain't bad.
Yep. God damn.
It's kind of a bad face one.
That's all good. I'll give her that. Give her a coat of paint.
Yeah, there's not really that much. She's kind of. I think Mike Mayock had the internet scrubbed to make sure she.
Right. Hang on. You do Mike Mayock. Hang on. Let me just Google him.
Anyway.
How terrible are we?
Well, no, she's an attractive girl, and she's on the web with pictures.
And my apologies to her.
Omar, Derek Carr at this point has had one of the most dysfunctional franchises in history. I'm trying to think which player who's been like the core member of that team. Like, obviously, no position is more important to the team than a quarterback for football, right? Like, no goalie is more important to a hockey team than a quarterback. No pitcher is more important to a baseball, right? Like, it's, but to my point, I can't think of a more dysfunctional sports franchise for that period of time, for the entire time that someone as important to that franchise as Derek Carr to the Raiders has been there.
Okay, so I'll answer you, but I'll have to ask you a question first. What is your definition of dysfunctional? Is it just wins and losses? Is it just bad management? Is it bad just leadership and ownership? Like, I would say
equal parts all three. Because, front office, losing. Well, and not just losing, but like five head coach, you know, five offensive coordinators in 8 years, atrocious draft picks that we knew were atrocious when they were drafted. The whole fucking front office getting kicked to the curb before a season, and then like recently, obviously, yeah, Ruggs and Arnett, like, and it's not just bad from one area. It's not like, oh, ownership is terrible, but there's some really good coaches and players, or like, you know, they're losing, but they're just a good solid franchise on a rough skid. It's like it's checking every box of terrible new coaches, bad management, terrible draft picks.
Because like, I was
up and down.
I was going to say Andy Dalton with the Bengals because they were like, I don't know how they won as many games being that dysfunctional a franchise.
Yeah.
But they still ended up winning a lot of games. So that one comes to mind. There is the older Vinatieri Tavares Jets days. That's pretty bad. But he wasn't only there for a few years. He wasn't there as long as Carr's been with the Raiders. Let's see what else. That's the only thing that comes to mind, because when you think of like a marquee player going through a few years with the same team, you're gonna think quarterbacks. But yeah, man, that's.
Did you think of like great players on bad franchises, like Junior Seau with the Chargers? You know, Dan Marino with the Dolphins, well, he did go to the Super Bowl. Like you think that, but like,
well, the Chargers went to the Super Bowl,
and so that's like kind of my point. Like, even dumpster fires had their heyday, but I don't think any franchise in the period that Derek Carr's been there has been hit by everything in that short a period of time.
Yeah,
he's been the one.
He's dealt with a lot, man. He's dealt with a lot for sure. Let's hope that he got his yips out and he's able to turn it around, because we need him to turn it around right now. The thing is, if there's a good and bad about having a lot of teams that are clustered together, yet you have to keep pace, because if you fall behind, if there's a lot of teams that have to jump over if you want to get back into that playoff picture. because a lot of teams are right around those 5-6 wins. So we got to make sure we kind of start to separate ourselves. And it's not going to be easy, man. Who knows what Bengals team we're going to get? Who knows what Cowboys team we're going to get? We get the Browns after that. Who knows? They do the one thing they do better than anyone in the league. We are very bad at stopping.
I will say this. Our schedule moving forward does look easier than it did 3 weeks ago. Right? Cowboys just got crushed by a shit team. Baker Mayfield's team's falling apart. He can't throw the ball, possibly hurt, right? Like,
they don't need to throw the ball if they can run like the way they've been running, dude.
My point being, it doesn't look as bad as it did 3 weeks. Not easy, but not what it looked like 3 weeks ago.
It looks
unbeatable.
Doable. It looks doable. Okay, we
it's
can
still
go
a harsh. It's still a tough schedule. But
yeah, then look at the next five games: Chiefs, Bengals, Cowboys, Browns, Chiefs. Those five games, a 3-2 is
well done.
Okay, I'm fucking well good with 8-5 after those five games, because those are tough five games. You got two in a row at home, okay, but you're going 3 in a row on the road. You're going to Dallas. You're going and Thanksgiving. You're going to Cleveland again, and then you're going to the
Chiefs. On a long week, which helps. That Cleveland one's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So a 3-2 would be fucking amazing, because then you're 8-5, you know, with four games left. You know, hopefully get that double digit wins. See what happens.
Well, one game at a time, Soto. One game at a time. And that next game is the Chiefs on Sunday prime time. We'll be doing a live post-game show after that. If I don't die before then, I got to get some 80-proof medicine in me before I pass out. But until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you for listening to the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you check us out on the post-game show coming up. Chiefs versus Raiders, Sunday night football. Until next time, later.